This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day, racing fans. Welcome to TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. I'm your host, Rob Tiansen. Thank you for joining me on this special edition of our podcast, which will be the post-Martinsville pre-Phoenix edition of our podcast. Nathan Solomon is off for this week, but he'll be back next week to get into postseason mode with me. So this is our last in-season edition of our podcast for the NASCAR season. Lots to get to talking about on this podcast because of the fact that Martinsville had a lot of drama, especially in the NASCAR Xfinity Series round of 8 cutoff race, as well as the fact that in the Cup Series side of things, we have a very young Championship Four. And when I say young, our oldest driver is 31 years old. And that's not old, because I'm 7 years older than that person, so we're not old. 30 is young. But anyways, it's going to be a fun podcast, even if it's a solo podcast, or solo cast as I've been calling it during these occasions. I do want to say with episode number 94, we're just 6 more episodes away from episode 100, which is kind of a crazy thought in my opinion, just to think that we've gone this far. By my calculations, if we can keep this up, to get to 6 weeks, that's just before Christmas time, folks. So around 2 weeks before we get to Christmas time, we're going to celebrate episode 100. And I'm going to get some fun stuff on here. And if I feel up to it, maybe some bloopers, because we're never perfect on the podcast. At least I'm not. Nathan probably, but I don't know about me. I'm perfect. I'm kidding. Anyways, it's going to be a fun podcast because we've got 2 hot seat interviews for this edition of our show. We've got Anthony Alfredo, of course, that will be joining us. He's the driver of the number 78 BJ McLeod Motorsports Chevrolet Camaro ZL1 in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. We'll get to hear from Anthony about, you know, the trials and tribulations of racing for a smaller team, as well as why he took a step back to go to NASCAR Xfinity Series racing to get his way possibly and hopefully back into the NASCAR Cup Series. And then we have Carson Hocevar, fresh off the Championship Four battle that's coming up at Phoenix Raceway. Our Nathan Solomon was at Martinsville last weekend, and in fact, he interviewed Carson just before that race weekend for the NASCAR Cup Series Xfinity 500. So we're going to have an on-track interview for this podcast, and I can't wait, because Carson's such a good guy, and we've had him once before. Why don't we bring him back again? And it's an on-track version, so I'm excited to bring that to you folks, and Nathan, I'm sure, is too, even though he's not here. But I always appreciate what Nathan does on this podcast and away from it as well. But before we get into Podium Perspectives, of course, why don't we hear from our presenting sponsor, SpoilerDieCast.com. Hey, racing fans, are you in the hunt for the latest and greatest in diecast cars? Head on over to SpoilerDieCast.com to get the latest offerings in Lionel Racing, NASCAR collectibles, IndyCar collectibles from Greenlight Collectibles, and much more. If you spend $20 or more in in-stock or pre-order items, you can save 5% off your order and get free shipping with promo code TPF. So head on over to SpoilerDieCast.com, spend $20 or more, and use promo code TPF to get free shipping and 5% off your order. Evan and his team get those orders out fast in lightning speed fashion. A proud sponsor of TPF Live. Yes, indeed, folks. Go and support a small, great business like SpoilerDieCast.com. You can use that promo code. You're going to save some money, get free shipping, and you'll be helping TPF in the process, because portions of that promo code do go to us. So if you use that, not only are you going to save some money, but you're going to help fund a big-time way with our outlet and trying to get us to grow and bring you folks more on-track coverage, which is what we want to do. We want to bring everybody to the racetrack if we can with our articles, our videos, podcasts. We just want to be able to execute on our goals. So use that promo code, save some money, and make us get some money as well. Well, with that, folks, why don't we get into it with Podium Perspectives, powered by SpoilerDieCast.com. Now, Ryan Blaney, he's found some speed in these playoffs. And a lot of folks in general, Nathan and I, we've been pointing out how the Ford camp hasn't really been that strong and fast as a whole. We've seen it happen in spurts and doses, if you will. I mean, Front Row Motorsports for a time looked really fast, especially with Michael McDowell winning at Indianapolis. But Team Penske overall, they've been all right. I mean, Ryan Blaney has won a couple of races before we got to Martinsville, but you know, Joey Logano only has that one victory at Atlanta, and Austin Cindric's sophomore season has been pretty rough for him. I would say for the entire Ford camp, it's not been the year that they've been looking for, and it's to no one's surprise that next season they're going to bring an updated version of the Ford Mustang with the Ford Mustang Dark Horse edition of that car, which, if you haven't seen it, folks, it is pretty slick. But we're talking about 2023, not next year just yet. So anyways, Ryan Blaney, you know, he needed a pretty good run. A win, obviously, would do a lot for him to get to the championship four, locking his position for certain into this pivotal race to go out after the NASCAR Cup Series Championship. What did he do, folks? Well, he qualified 11th, and I know when we saw qualifying on Saturday, he looked a little bummed, a little bit pissed off with himself. You know, probably could have gotten more out of the car, but you know, starting in the top 11 is not a bad thing at Martinsville Speedway. Anything can happen if you're patient, and doesn't mean that short-term speed is going to be, you know, the determining factor. You have to be good on the long run, which we know is common with Martinsville Speedway. Well, anyways, he starts 11th, he drives his way up to second place, gets 9 points. 9 stage points, folks. That's pretty huge when you're trying to go for the championship four. And yeah, Ryan Blaney had Denny Hamlin to think about most of the race. I mean, Denny Hamlin won stage one, got a playoff point, and 10 stage points. The tables were turned in stage two, however, because Ryan Blaney won stage two, and Denny Hamlin finished second. So it looked like, for you numerology folks, it was kind of a pretty agreeable time seeing the number 11 and 12 cars of Denny Hamlin and Ryan Blaney battling throughout this race. But we had some late race chargers, if you will, that were mixing it up towards the front of the field. Namely, we had Chase Briscoe up front, Joey Logano, who I mentioned earlier, it has kind of been a tough season for his championship defense. Well, he looked pretty fast. You know, we also had Eric Almirola, who announced the fact that he is not returning to SHR, Stuart Haas Racing, for next season. So he's looking possibly to get his fill of racing in a part-time schedule. He had a pretty darn good run in stage three. Kyle Larson was a factor a little bit, but mostly because of pitch strategy from crew chief Cliff Daniels. I mean, it was a pretty competitive race. I wouldn't say the greatest now Martinsville race, because we still have issues with the short track package with the next-gen car. But overall, it was entertaining to see, hey, you know, was Hamlin going to win it? Was Eric Almirola going to get the job done? What about Ryan Blaney? Could he win the race and for sure lock his place into the championship four? The answer is a resounding yes, of course. Ryan Blaney got a Game 7 home run when he needed it most. And like the Texas Rangers this week, our latest World Series champions, Ryan Blaney got to celebrate a chance to get to Phoenix Raceway and vie for his first ever NASCAR Cup Series championship. Not only that, it's a huge moment for Ford, because they're not going to be happy about this season in terms of their cars not having the consistent pace, the consistent power that they usually have. So for Ryan Blaney and Team Penske to be there against two Chevrolets from Hendrick's campus, and then of course we've got, you know, a Joe Gibbs car like we usually do, but this time with Christopher Bell. You know, Ryan Blaney came through. It was a clutch victory. You know, and he's proven that, you know, that's what the playoffs are for. It's a brand new season. The format rewards, you know, short-term consistency. You don't have to be necessarily excellent. You just have to rise to the occasion, which is what he's doing. And there is no penalty for doing that. And people might argue, oh, that doesn't mean that's a real champion. Well, sorry, folks. Since 2004, we've been under some kind of format where we've had a playoffs format or a postseason format. So congrats to Ryan Blaney for that dramatic victory at Martinsville Speedway. And Eric Almirola wanted to go out with a victory, and who knows, maybe he'll be a factor at Phoenix, but to see him finish second and knowing that it's the second to last race for him at SHR, and Smithfield's second to last ever race as a NASCAR sponsor. It had to be a bittersweet moment for him. But overall, you know, we have a really, really good championship four field. So just to refresh you folks, and I'm not doing it by like preference, this is by car numbers, like from the smallest car number to the highest one. We've got Kyle Larson, who's in. Then we got Ryan Blaney, Christopher Bell, and William Byron. The ages of these drivers is pretty insane. I mean, again, Kyle Larson's 31 years old. He's the oldest of the group. And like I said at the top of the show, 31's not old. But for you youngsters out there, you probably think that that's a dinosaur's age, but it's not. So I look for great things to happen in the Championship 4, and I'll give my thoughts more about that on the last topic for Podium Perspectives. Now, the thing we have to also consider as well is the fact that because of this young Championship 4 field, that meant that Martin Truex Jr., Denny Hamlin, Chris Buescher, and Tyler Reddick were all eliminated. To me, that's a testament to how close the competition was and how one bad race can knock you out regardless of what you've done in the previous rounds or the regular season. I mean, the regular season champion and Martin Truex Jr. had a terrific, terrific first 26 races. And it's not to say that he didn't do enough in the playoffs, but he did struggle to get good finishes in the playoffs. And it didn't help him when, you know, he had the wreck at Kansas. He didn't really run that well at certain places. Didn't have the pace that we had seen in the regular season. Tyler Reddick, it was kind of a seesaw season for the number 45 team, but I expect more good things out of that 23-11 camp next season. Chris Buescher has nothing to hang his head over about, because to get three victories this year, Richmond, Michigan, and Daytona, anybody would want to have that season. So he shouldn't be ashamed of that. And Denny Hamlin, I know when he tweeted, you know, basically like, thanks, it's been a, you know, good situation or whatever, we'd be foolish to dismiss Denny Hamlin. And people are being ridiculous about him, saying, oh, he hasn't been the same since the next-gen car. Well, I hate to tell you folks, he's been pretty good in the next-gen car with him and Chris Gabehart. So I don't know where all of that's coming from. I think it's silly posturing, if you ask me. Now, something that was not too silly that happened at Martinsville Speedway was the Richard Childress Racing, or RCR, fallout that happened between Sheldon Creed and Austin Hill. And that situation was a little uncomfortable to watch. Now, in the final restart, the overtime restart, for last Saturday's Denon Tools 250, I'm not going to lie to you folks, I kind of saw it coming. It's not to say that one or the other is wrong. They both needed to win the race to basically get in to the Championship Four at Phoenix. It's not a situation where if Sheldon Creed had won the race, then Austin Hill was going to make it. Because the problem with that was that Cole Custer was coming towards the front of the field as well. So it was desperation time between those two drivers to go and be the sole RCR representative in the Championship Four. When we got to turn four, however, in the last lap, in the last lap of that extended race, man, that was ugly. I mean, I don't have S&T data. I can't confirm if Sheldon Creed stopped in the middle of the corner or not. I'm not trying to, like, point the finger at anyone. But in any case, he slows down a little bit in turn four, and it caused a little bit of a logjam where Austin Hill was collected in a mayhem in turn four, and we had a drag race between Justin Allgaier and Sheldon Creed. And Justin Allgaier eked it out, not by much, to get into the Championship Four. So it was a great moment for JR Motorsports, or Junior Motorsports, but for RCR, man, that one's going to hurt. And I know a lot of folks are not too thrilled about the reaction from Andy Petree, from Richard Childress himself. You know, Richard Childress basically called Sheldon Creed the most stupid driver he's worked with. And I don't know if that's exactly something you want to air out to the public, to the press, because when things are said like that, of course it's going to get disseminated as a journalist. And we journalists have to inform the fans of what's said. And we're not going to make it up. And that's exactly what Richard Childress called him. Now, I don't think that people often say stuff that's right during the heat of the moment. But Sheldon Creed, I thought he handled everything very professionally. And I thought how Richard Childress handled it in particular was not very, very classy. His exact words were, "I've had drivers try for me before, but nobody as stupid as Sheldon Creed. You don't do that as a team player. What else do you want me to tell you?" And that's what he told NBC Sports' reporter Dustin Long last Saturday in Martinsville. Listen, I know people, again, I'm not crucifying people for saying stuff over, you know, an incident like that in the heat of the moment, but you probably should slow your roll, because once the microphone's on you or a phone's on you to say something, it doesn't go away. It's like an X post or what was a tweet. And just because you delete it doesn't mean it goes away. Things stay online forever, and that's why it's viral. So, and the most awkward thing is that, you know, Austin Hill, when he was pretty pissed off with Sheldon Creed, he basically said, "Oh, I'm looking forward to Jesse Love joining RCR and having Sheldon go to his deal over at Joe Gibbs Racing." And that hasn't been publicly announced yet, but I guess he spilled the beans on that one, so kind of weird. And a lot of folks were saying, "Oh, I think Sheldon Creed should just sabotage the number two team." Listen, that's not a cool thing to do. If you're unhappy with your employer, you don't exactly try to, like, make things crappy for your soon-to-be former boss. You just try to be classy about it, and then when it's over, it's over. So Sheldon Creed is a classy guy. I don't think he's going to, you know, grenade the engine in turn one on lap one, or, you know, give Austin Hill a hard time. He'll do what he's typically done, which is what got him a championship in the past. And he'll go to his next situation, which is more than likely going to be Joe Gibbs Racing. And I look for him to do lots of great things with whatever team within Joe Gibbs that he'll do race for. So just an awkward situation, very uncomfortable, but to quote Pam about, you know, seeing things like that, it's just so weird. And it reminds me of an episode where she says about the Dundies, "You know what they say about a car wreck where it's so awful that you can't look away?" Well, I'm going to change the wording on this next part. "Well, what happened between Sheldon Creed and RCR is like a car wreck that you want to look away, but you can't because your boss is making you go." And that's kind of what the cameras were doing, and that's what we saw. So I'd love to hear what you guys and girls think about that situation if you tweet to me and to Nathan and to the Pony Finish. So definitely a strange, strange situation. Now, what's a really sad situation is what's happening to the track formerly known as Auto Club Speedway, which is just basically a speedway that is now being deconstructed in Fontana, California. It's heartbreaking, folks. It was a great 2 mile racetrack. And a lot of you youngsters who are now probably a little bit younger than me, 10 years ago, you were all crapping on this track. You said it sucked. You hated it. You know, we need more short tracks. Well, NASCAR is going to give you a short track, but this is my opinion. I'm not trying to, you know, crap on NASCAR. I'm not trying to, you know, poop on them. I love the people at NASCAR. And I'm not trying to give all like a clickbait argument, but this is the most stupidest thing I've been seeing in NASCAR is to tear down this track. I know they sold the land. I get the business side of it. But really? Fontana delivered, especially with this car, especially in the last few years that we had the Gen 6 car. I mean, it's total garbage what we're doing. And I feel bad for the fans of SoCal, because this is another track that we're just taking away from them, all for the name of property, commercial real estate, what have you. It's a shame. I don't think we're ever going to go back. I hope I'm wrong. And if we do go back, well, I want to have an open mind about the short track race, but I'm not encouraged about how the short track package has been with this car. You know, so it sucks to see a great track tore up. When it opened in 1997, it was exciting. I know once we got past that phase where NASCAR was just a very popular sport nationwide. I wouldn't want to say around 2007, 2008, right around the Car of Tomorrow era. I know that NASCAR struggled a little bit, and then we started seeing attendance issues, ratings issues, and is 18 to 39 or whatever that age bracket, are we struggling with that? Listen, we're never going to be the number one sport, and I'm not throwing the towel, but we have great drivers. The cars have potential. It's awesome on intermediates. The big tracks like Pocono and now just Michigan, which are the only pure 2+ mile race tracks that we have now, they're fantastic on those tracks. It's a short track package that has to get improved greatly. And I'm not laughing, I find it comical. I'm laughing because I'm exasperated. And NASCAR is kind of just avoiding what needs to get done. I'm no engineer, of course. But the tires didn't exactly change Martinsville. I said it was a good race. I didn't call it a classic. But we need to fix the car, get drivers' inputs, get things so that we do see passing at Martinsville, that we see passing at Bristol, Richmond, and I wouldn't say North Wilkesboro yet. Let's see how it happens with the new pavement for the All-Star race next year. But I don't know if we're ever going to see a race in Fontana, California again when it's potentially a short track. So we'll follow up on that. But my gut feeling right now says I think the last time we've ever seen a race there is going to be Kyle Busch's victory in that very cold race that Luis Torres and Michael Donohue covered earlier this year, and it sucks. It just really sucks that it happened. Not the fact that Luis and Michael were there. It just sucks to lose Fontana. Well, folks, you know what time it is now in Podium Perspectives, right? It's winning time. So this is when I get to give you my picks for the NASCAR Championship weekend at Phoenix Raceway. So I'll start off with the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series Championship race. The defending race winner is our defending Truck Series champion in Zane Smith. And now, unfortunately, he is not a part of the championship four field. He was eliminated during the round of eight. So we have to consider the likes of Ben Rhodes, Grant Enfinger, Corey Heim, and Carson Hocevar. So I'll give race winning picks and championship picks. And now, if it's a championship pick that's going to win the race, you'll only hear one name for the event. So for this particular race at Phoenix, I do think it's going to go to a championship four race driver, and I'll go with Corey Heim to get the job done. He's just been very consistent. If you've looked at his statistics, folks, it's just ridiculous. It's almost as amazing as Jeff Gordon in 1998. That's how awesome he's been having in terms of time with consistency. So the number 11 Tricon Garage Toyota Tundra will be the one emerging victorious on Friday night. Now, when it comes to Saturday's NASCAR Xfinity Series Championship race, Ty Gibbs is a defending race winner and our defending champion. Now, of course, he's not in the race as well. So this is going to be a fun one. Our championship four field for that, of course, is John Hunter Nemechek, Sam Mayer, as well as Justin Allgaier and Cole Custer in the number 00 Haas Automation Ford Mustang. Now, earlier this year, we know that Joe Gibbs Racing, Sammy Smith won the race. But again, I'm going to go with the championship four favorite. And for this one, I think John Hunter Nemechek is going to get the job done. Probably has some good notes from Sammy Smith's team if they've kissed and made up after what happened in Martinsville. Big question mark on that. But even if he doesn't, John Hunter Nemechek has been a terrific driver, and his crew chief, they're just getting along so well. So I'm not going to be surprised to see John Hunter Nemechek get a championship before he graduates to the NASCAR Cup Series. So JHN and crew chief Ben Beshear, they're gonna have a good old time on Saturday night. Now, as far as the NASCAR Cup Series championship race is concerned, Joey Logano is our defending race winner, and in fact, our defending NASCAR Cup Series champion. But he was eliminated from the playoffs after the round of 16. So, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to go with my championship four pick for the victory. And it's probably no surprise when I say it's the number five of Kyle Larson that will get the job done. I loved what I saw out of him in the short run. And I know he wasn't too happy with the long run pace, but I feel like they've learned a lot these last two races at Michigan. He learned a lot in these last two races at Phoenix. Now, we know last year he had great long run pace, but he was terrible during a short run. And it was the opposite earlier this year in the March race. So I really feel like when it comes to Cliff Daniels being very meticulous and studying what goes on, I think that we're going to go and see a good race out of Cliff Daniels and Kyle Larson to go and get the championship for Mr. H and get that second title for Kyle Larson. So those are my picks, folks, but what do you think at home or wherever you are? Let me know on any social media platform, whether it's X, Threads, Facebook, or Instagram. My handle is at Rob Tiongson. That's RobTiongson. Again, RobTiongson to go and chat with me or interact with me about my picks for anything NASCAR. And of course, Nathan's is NSolly02. NSOLLY02. And of course, the podium finish, that's our general handle. So for the last time, folks, give us your picks. And if you happen to get all three championship picks correct, and let's just say if a different race winner happens, I will get you two in-stock 2023 164 diecast cars from our sponsors in spoilerdiecast.com. Complimentary of us. So that's the only strings attached, is you just give us your picks. Now, folks, it's time to have some fun with this week's Hot Seat interviews featuring Anthony Alfredo and Carson Hocevar. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of In the Hot Seat here on the Podium Finish and the Podium Finish Live. I'm, of course, Rob Tiongson, and on this edition of In the Hot Seat, I'm pleased to welcome back a driver we haven't heard from in a while, and quite honestly, we need to bring him back more often. He's, of course, the driver of the number 78 BJ McLeod Motorsport Chevrolet Camaro entry in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. That driver would be Anthony Alfredo. Anthony, it's been a while, but welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. Appreciate you having me on the show again.
Absolutely. And it looks like even though you're not in the race car, I can tell you're by the sim rig at your house, so you can never get away from racing, can you?
Nope, definitely not. Always, if I'm not driving real race cars, I'm driving virtual ones.
Well, as we know, folks, the virtual thing is actually pretty darn close to the real thing, and we'll talk more about sim tour racing, of course, especially with that exciting announcement earlier this month about, you know, iRacing's partnership with NASCAR and video game consoles. So I know Anthony's got some really good opinions about that, but let's talk about Anthony here because that's why we're here in the first place. Now, I know you're driving full-time for BJ's team, co-owned by BJ and his wife, Jessica. I know it's not quite been up to the results you're looking for, but you guys are fighting hard. You're, you know, building some good performances. Well, how important is it to kind of keep your head up knowing that there's going to be some uphill battles as you and your program get up to speed?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, obviously you got to have realistic goals. And honestly, you know, the 78 was 32nd in points last year. So for us to go out there and be a top 20 team is a big accomplishment. Obviously, Jessica, BJ, you know, believed in my crew and I to come over and help build the program up and have potential. We started the year off really good. Unfortunately, we just had a string of bad luck, really, where we just had mechanical failures and got caught up in other people's messes and things of that nature. And for a small, those events usually set you back and you end up playing catch up for a little while. So I felt like that hurt us for a few weeks. Obviously didn't have the end results we were looking for, but I felt like we did still have our speed. So now we're, you know, kind of getting back on track to have the pace again that we should. Racing where we do in kind of the middle of the pack is the danger zone, as I call it. It's just super intense, and you're either behind or in the middle of a lot of the accidents that occur. So it's a tough place to be each week, but as I said earlier, you know, we definitely accomplished a lot with a little so far, and taken, you know, very limited resources and been able to, you know, lead laps, score stage points, run up front, and you know, have some really good runs. So that's something to be proud of.
Certainly. And I think you guys are working really, really arduously to make sure that this program is not only good for this year, but I'm sure as the season's winding down, it's never too early to think about next year. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, you know, it took time to kind of get used to the equipment and whatnot as the year went on. I was working with pretty much all the same people as last year, Pat, Tryson, crew chief, and the rest of the guys. So we had that communication, but the equipment was a little bit different. So in, you know, our situation, obviously it took a while to kind of figure out how these cars drive, the parts and pieces we have to make them go fast. And Pat and the guys have done a good job for me. And as far as the physical side of that goes, then for me, it's, you know, how they feel behind the wheel, obviously. So I've gotten into a rhythm, and I think that's something we could now, you know, build on the second half of the year and beyond.
And I think Pat Tryson is one of the most experienced, most well-knowledgeable individuals in the garage area, just given his experiences with the drivers that he's worked with, including, of course, Mark Martin in the mid-2000s. And I have to ask you, you know, how intense is he to work with? Just because I know Pat has a football background, and I know you've played sports before you got into racing. How have you two jocks, in a way, coalesced with each other?
He's definitely not intense at all, actually. I mean, he's really fun to be around. He's a great leader for all the guys on the team, and I've learned a lot from him, as you know, as a driver and a team member. So we've had some really great chemistry and been able to work well together the last couple of years, and I feel like we definitely have, you know, outperformed and overachieved both last year and this year. So, you know, we didn't have the end results this year in a lot of events that we hoped for, but you know, we work really well together. We push each other to be better, hold each other accountable. And it's been cool to work with someone who has so much experience, for sure.
That's really good to hear that he's mellowed down, because I've been around racing for so long that still to my mind, I think of an incident at Martinsville in 1997, where he just got so fired up about his driver getting a pit road penalty. And he was even more upset than the driver at Martinsville. So that's telling me a lot that he's sort of mellowed down. Do you think you've had that impact on him?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I know there's a lot of times I hear stories of what he's doing up on the pit box, arms flailing, and maybe you know, getting upset at certain situations. But he has the option to hit the radio button or not. So I think I probably missed some of that. But I know he just cares a lot about it, and he works as hard, if not harder, than anybody else out there. So just like me behind the wheel, you know, he wants us to go out there and perform well. And I think either of us are both of us are disappointed when we don't, or, you know, we get caught up in something or aren't able to show what we are truly capable of.
Yeah, I love hearing that. And I think both of you bring out the best in each other and the program as well. And that's why you guys are where you are right now, to make this program and yourselves better individuals and professionals in the world of stock car racing. And I know you've definitely earned your opportunities. You are scrapping for good opportunities in the early 2020s. I know you were up in Cup, and now you're back in Xfinity. You know, I know we talked a little bit about this before, but how has it been racing for BJ's team and knowing that they've hopefully helped you sharpen your racecraft?
It's been great. I mean, obviously working with the same guys as last year played a pretty big role in just having that chemistry side of things down. You know, like I said, there were some nuances and other things we had to get going, but it was definitely rewarding, and I appreciate them, all of our partners. We've got some really awesome sponsors in our portfolio that we've just been building up and growing with, and a lot of new ones that have come on board. So I think the last couple of years we've kind of just been rebuilding and putting ourselves in a position to go out there and be more competitive.
And it's certainly showing for sure. And I happen to have one of your partners as my background right here. I'm sure you remember this race behind me.
Yep. Andy's Frozen Custard. Got to drive the Andy's Frozen Custard Chevrolet Camaro in their race, the Andy's Frozen Custard 300. So that was pretty special. It's a lot of responsibility, but it was definitely very cool to have the race title sponsor on the car.
And not only that, I believe they even had a custard flavor in tribute of you. So I'm sure that had to blow you away, knowing that it wasn't that long ago you were just a fan of the stands, and here you are at 24. You've got a custard named after you.
Yeah, I'm a foodie, so to have a custom item on the menu that was named after me, the cannoli thunder concrete, obviously inspired by my Italian heritage, that was pretty awesome.
I loved it. And I did try it in the media center. It was pretty good, folks. So if it's still around, make sure you take advantage of it before those limited supplies are exhausted if you happen to be near an Andy's frozen custard. Really good, especially when it was 106 degrees that weekend. Oh boy. Boy, oh boy, I don't want to think about that heat anytime soon. But obviously there's only a few more races left in the year for Xfinity, and then we're going to the off season. I know this might be kind of a trivial cookie cutter question to ask you, but realistically, what are some of your goals that you're hoping to check off so that you can say, all right, I can put my name on this season, and when we get to next season at Daytona, I'm really looking forward to crushing this.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in the year, we just got to keep, bringing good speed to the racetrack to finish strong. I think Las Vegas and Homestead are two tracks we could run top 20 at, which without any attrition are really good days. And if there is some and we can stay out of trouble and capitalize on it, I'm sure we'll be able to run even better than that. Martinsville, I'm not really sure. Unfortunately, we had a mechanical issue before the race even started last year, so we kind of just had to ride around all day, and I'm not really sure what we had. I would like to think we can go there and be pretty competitive because last year we actually qualified seventh for that race and ran the top 10 pretty much all day. We just missed it on the strategy and feel like we have unfinished business in that race. So after that, Phoenix, and we got top 15 there early in the year. So if we can go do that again, we'll be in a good spot. And I just got to be top 20 in drivers by the end of the year. That was tough because last year we were top 15. We barely missed the playoffs. But this year, a lot of really good cars last year didn't have full-time drivers, So the 26, the 48, the 31, the 27, obviously Jordan's team stepped it up and gone to two cars. And then you have the 25, which didn't exist last year, and they have, technical alliance, and Haas went to two house cars. So there's five or six cars out on the track that didn't exist last year. You didn't have to worry about. So it's made it way more competitive and a lot tougher for the smaller teams because we don't have lease motors or, an alliance or engineers or any sim time. Just so little compared to those bigger teams. So that kind of puts you back in the fight, right? So anyways, if we could be top 20 at the end of the year, it's where I think we should be. We just gotta keep fighting, run well these next few races, and finish strong to do that.
It sounds like it's going to be a situation where you can move those goalposts, knowing that the competition in the Xfinity series, it's already been competitive. But this year alone, as you pointed out, there's a lot of different factors, new faces, new teams that certainly have added to the variety of spice in this division. And I'm just kind of curious, you having the experience of driving for a top team and your current team and knowing how Xfinity series competition can be, how much of a difference is there in the competition? Is it just a matter of milliseconds and adjustment? Like, how close is it once you're inside the top 20 to try to work your way inside the top 15 and possibly the top 10?
Yeah, it's super close. I would say that it's probably the most competitive it's been in the last decade, at least. I mean, there's 15 cars that could probably win a race, it seems like. But there's 16 or 17 Cup affiliated Xfinity teams right now, and a couple more with alliances. So to even be a top 20 team is huge if you don't have any of those resources. So it's really competitive. It's really exciting for the fans to watch. Obviously, like you said, it doesn't take much sometimes to, just go the wrong way on an adjustment, or maybe a little bit gets you the speed you need to run more competitive, just because it's really tightened up the field the last couple of years. But also speed costs. So I feel like the price has kind of been driven up a little bit with all these new teams coming in and the bigger teams trying to remain at the top. So you gotta, unfortunately, have the funds to go out there and be competitive, and it costs a lot, even just to be a top 20 team.
Never realized that. So that just goes to show, folks, just how being resourceful and just trying to make do with what you've got is half the battle in Xfinity. And I think folks are going to get a great appreciation from what you just said there, Anthony, because wow, that's And it goes to show why you guys work so hard to get the finishes you can get. And I think that more stories should be focused on that to show that real side to Xfinity as well. So I appreciate you sharing that with me. And I'm sure, I don't know if this is really in your long-term plans, but I would imagine you going back to Xfinity, is this sort of an en route to hopefully come back to Cup sometime down the road?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I had the opportunity to run a couple Cup races this year, which was awesome. And if I could do some more next year, that'd be great. But obviously, I just want to focus on being competitive in this series, which, you know, might take us building our program up or you know, having an opportunity to get into a, you know, a top tier car to go out there, win races and compete for a championship. I mean, that's what I'm here to do. I have the experience to do that now. I just haven't really been able to obviously show it. I guess I have on a relative scale just to what I've had, but you know, it's important to me to be a winner and a champion at this level and then see what comes after that.
And you got plenty of years, my friend, because you're a young individual, and don't even think that if you get in your 30s that you're old. You're going to still be young. So just keep your head up, and I'm sure you're going to be around for the long haul. And we just talked about it before we started doing the interview about Sim2 Racing. And I know you've got quite the background, of course, with iRacing and now racing in NASCAR. You know, hearing the good news about iRacing having this console game coming out in 2025, how much of a victory is this going to be for fans to get a better experience for what you guys and the girls do at the racetrack?
It'll be really cool. I mean, I think the biggest thing when it comes to a console game is it's just a better experience for some of the casual fans that are, you know, playing those racing games, because the engine of those is super outdated. And I think having iRacing develops a realistic simulation to come in and be able to, you know, produce that game is going to make it a much better experience for the fans and people playing it. And you know, a better platform for people like myself to get on there and interact with our fans, build a community and produce content with. So I'm excited to see how it comes out. But in the meantime, I mean, iRacing's been doing really well too. And that's, you know, where I run on my SimSeeds driving simulator to get laps for each upcoming race. And that's, you know, a critical tool for me to train and develop as a racer.
Yeah, for sure. Because a lot of folks that are now in NASCAR have parlayed success from the simulator to now being on the racetrack. William Byron, you, of course, Parker Retzloff as well is another recent example. I mean, kind of talking along those same tangent point, you know, how kind of a mind-blowing experience is it for you to see folks that you probably have raced against on your simulator, and now all of a sudden you're going door-to-door with them in a real stock car?
It's awesome because, you know, you don't play Madden against somebody and then find yourselves playing on Super Bowl teams. And it's, I mean, it might like playing Madden, but it's not going to make you a better football player necessarily. Whereas sim racing can literally help you hone your skills and develop racecraft and things that are necessary to be a competitive race car driver.
For sure. And how close would you say the sim racing experience is to the real life experience, given the fact, of course, things change more fluid on the racetrack, for, you know, iRacing to try to keep up with?
Yeah, there's a few things that are obviously different and a couple nuances, but as far as general racecraft and all the visual cues and all that, is it's as close as it gets. I also have like D-Box technology on my SimSeeds driving simulator, which adds cueing and motion feedback, so you could really feel the bumps and the seams and all that, which makes it that much more realistic and allows me to get more out of the sim, you know, when preparing for races. So it's really important, but it's cool to see the role it's played. Obviously, teams are using the sim now more than ever just because track time's so limited and you can't just go test or practice whenever you want. And the little bit of practice you do get on the weekends, arguably not enough. So it's played a bigger role, I think, than it ever has for pretty much everybody.
Imagine that. So parents who are watching this interview or listening to us, don't ground your kid if they're going to go in iRacing. They might be racing against Anthony one day. So take some advice from him on this, because I'm telling you, video games are for real, and simulators as well. But I got a couple more questions for you before we wrap things up. And I'm kind of curious, you know, if you had an unlimited budget and you got to build a racetrack anywhere around the world, what kind of racetrack would you build and where would it be?
That's tough. Anywhere in the world, I mean, I would. That's a challenging one. Well, I think just being from the Connecticut, New York area, I'd love to see, you know, a national series oval in that area. But if I were to build an oval, I think it would be a short track or like, you know, Darlington size, maybe probably a mile or under, but not as fast as like a Dover. I'd keep it like more flat, very abrasive surface. So tire strategy matters and, you know, high tire wear, maybe progressive banking so you could run up by the wall. I think that would be pretty cool. I like how Darlington's my favorite track, and I just use that as an example because it's not too big, it's not too small. It's multi-groove, you know, very worn out, and it's almost the perfect racetrack. So that would be cool to have the opportunity to build a place like that in the Northeast.
I would love to see that happen, being a New Englander myself. So it better happen. And you know, it seems like Darlington's getting a lot of love from this question, so I'm sure they're going to be really thrilled to hear about that. Just out of curiosity, though, would you want to have turns 1 and 2, turns 3 and 4, or basically a clone of Darlington in this area?
Clone it. I think the characteristics of the corners being so different, but having the opportunity to have multi-groove racing is cool. So I'd have to work on that. Maybe throw a dog leg in there, you know, on the front straightaway or something like that. That'd be kind of neat. Change it up a little bit.
Well, I hope that iRacing is listening to this because maybe they'll make Anthony Alfredo Motor Speedway out of this. I'm just saying that would be kind of a cool concept if we can't have it in real life to have it on the simulator. So if they're listening or watching, I hope they consider that for sure. And for my last question for you, I'm going to throw you a curveball here. Let's just say it's the off season. You know, you're kind of chilling at home and all of a sudden SiriusXM gives you a call and they're like, "Hey, Anthony, we want you to be a guest DJ for one of our stations." What kind of music and artists would you be playing as a guest DJ for the day?
Oh, I'd be playing classic hard rock for sure. So you could, you know, I could be hosting Ozzy's Boneyard or Hair Nation, something like that. I think I could handle.
Oh, man, I love it. Oh, finally, somebody who has music taste like me. Because your fellow colleagues are a little bit into country, so I'm like, yes, finally something I actually appreciate. But Anthony, I really appreciated getting to interview you here. Hopefully we don't wait too long to do another one, but is there anything you want to say to your fans of your team, and just the readers and listeners who are going to check out this interview?
Definitely. Just thankful for everybody's support. I wouldn't be where I'm at without them, and nowhere near where I want to be yet, or I'm sure some of the fans want to see me at, but we'll keep pushing and just take it one race at a time, and you know, have faith that things will come full circle for us.
So to start, you know, you've done 7 Cup races now, 6 here with Legacy. Just overall, what's your experience been like, especially working with this team?
It's been a lot of fun. You know, it was nice to be able to jump in here. Number one, get myself more experience for next year that no one knew about originally, but knew it was going to be big for me. And big to, you know, we only get 20 minutes of practice next year, right? So any track laps I can get in this car and learn is big. So the fact they were able to give me this and help them out in a tough time and, you know, try to put together good, really good runs. And they've been a blast to work with and try to go fast with.
Obviously the circumstances of this team, but did this opportunity at all come as a bit of a surprise to you? Were you expecting to get this seat time when you saw the car opened up?
No, I wasn't. I was hoping that I would, you know, sort of get the call, but I had my hand up, but a lot of other people didn't. You know, just real thankful that they were fortunate enough to do a big favor for myself, Spire. You know, luckily they kind of saw a gateway and willing to take a shot on a pretty big risk with a not much potential reward, and fortunate enough we've been able to give good runs and really kind of reset this team and hopefully build their confidence back. Hopefully not too much, because I got a race against them next year, but it's been a lot of fun to work with them and enjoyed every minute of it.
Why do you feel like you've transitioned up to Cup so well from the truck?
I don't know. You know, I kind of always have said I feel like this car intimidates a lot of people, and I was more scared to crash than, more scared to be slow than crash. You know, I know there's gonna be mistakes made, and but I much rather be making those mistakes, trying to go fast and maybe pushing a little too hard than make a mistake, being conservative.
performance-wise, have you been pretty satisfied with what you've been able to do so far? Now, a couple DNFs your last few times out, but overall, have you been happy with how you've run?
I have. We've been really fast. We've really kind of, I thought, reset and be able to kind of make something here and put together a lot of good runs, even running top five at Bristol. Thought we could finish there without a loose wheel, but the fact we can still run 11th with a loose wheel, days like those are pretty big. We're doing things we on paper probably shouldn't, from both myself and a team aspect, but we work well together and we don't let the expectations or where we should run. We just think we could perform really well, and I think we've achieved that.
I'm sure in a circumstance like this, it's difficult for a driver just to kind of get thrown into a new team in the middle of the year. So how have you guys just been able to really gel so well?
I don't know. They wanted to go forward. They had confidence in me, and I had confidence in them. I wanted to adapt myself and not adapt the car to me. I wanted to just try and make myself better, which I think has allowed them to really, kind of give them a direction and. We just helped, complimented each other really, and we both wanted to go fast, and they were tired of, running kind of where they were, and we've just been able to really kind of just give it a new direction. The 43's been fast, which has been good, so it's just been a good in whole, from both cars really.
How much of a help has Luke Lambert been in this whole transition? What's it been like working with him as your crew chief?
Oh, he's been big. He worked actually as a crew chief, and Phil Gould was his car chief in the RCR days that they had. So, they were able to talk a little bit. Ryan Sparks, who I ran Gateway with, are pretty close to Luke. So, luckily, the crew chief I previously worked with and continuing to still work with, have talked with Luke, and Luke's been a big help, but this whole 42 team, Dex, Phillip, everybody all the way down, Keith, everybody, they're all in on this deal, and they wanted to go fast, and they've reminded me multiple times they wish the year wasn't ending just quite yet. Normally you run 38 weeks of a year, you want the season to be over, get your off season, have some family time, but they've had so much fun, they wish we could keep going, so which is probably the biggest reward I've gotten.
Did you have goals for yourself coming in? Did the team have goals for you coming in, and have you achieved those goals?
No. The goal is just to run laps and experience it. Everything else is a bonus, but quickly it became I want to go fast and want to outperform per se. Maybe overstepped a little at Vegas, but besides that, really haven't made a whole lot of mistakes that are day ending. So that's been good as well. Be able to make mistakes and not it be day ending, scuffle wall here and there, make a restart lane change, but been able to bounce back almost every time.
And you mentioned the cup deal for next year. You said this is kind of more of something to get you adjusted for next year, like had the deal already kind of been set in stone when this whole thing at Legacy kind of started to come together?
Yeah, it was my cup deal was signed and done before this, and luckily Cal Wells and everybody at Legacy Motor Club is pretty close with the group at Spire, and they kind of did them a favor and allowed me to go run, and knowing they would help Spire with them helping me, and maybe willing to take the risk with me, and luckily they were able to, I've been able to kind of fill that gap and kind of reassure that they made the right choice, or at least I think I did. So that's been a lot of fun. So the fact that they were able to get along and help each other and end up helping me the most is something I can't thank both of them for doing.
In terms of getting adjusted for next year, how crucial is this time with Legacy going to be in terms of just kind of hitting the ground running come February?
I mean, it's good. I'll have a lot of races, and luckily the way the schedule works out, these are a lot of tracks that I'm gonna come back to in the spring, so it's not gonna be that too long of a turnaround. I'm already have a super speedway race. Which is why I was probably super aggressive at Talladega, knowing very rarely you ever in a super speedway race where per se for selfish reasons it doesn't matter per se. You just go out and finish, and however you finish is great. Obviously there's the team points, but this late in the year you kind of are where you are. You can't win and you're in. You don't need to get points for the playoffs. That stuff. So I just literally learned it as per se, not messing around, but learning every chance I could, making moves to see if they work or not, you know, making high risk moves just to see if they work and try to put myself in every scenario. You know, I was looking at like a scrimmage per se, you know, when it comes 500 time, which I think is going to be big, and all these rest of the races. You know, I've even talked to Josh Wise about after Vegas. You know, I felt like I knew the moves that everybody was going to make before they did it, and I just felt like I was back in my truck again, you know, really taking advantage of people on restarts, maybe frustrating people a little bit, but you know, maybe putting them per se in bad spots, but sometimes you gotta be selfish on restarts, and I was able to do that, capitalize on it, and so that part's been really fun to be able to go from where I was, and now I feel like I can be super aggressive while knowing the limit of being aggressive.
A lot's changed for you over the last year. You know, when you look back to around this time last year, kind of what were you thinking your future was?
I mean, I never thought I would sit in a cup car. You know, I had to kind of sit down and tell myself, you know, it's okay to, I don't need to go set the world on fire. You know, there might not be a day that I sit in a cup car, but I got to realize that I got to be able to have job security in my truck deal, and, you know, just kind of talk to myself into, you know, that that's a good possibility, that's all I get to, and I was okay with it, and I had to come to terms with it. But if I'm going to do that, I'm going to be the best truck racer I can be. And I think that's when it started to turn around, and all of a sudden I was getting calls to run a cup car and have a deal signed for the next few years of my life to at least guarantee myself next, you know, year or two in a cup car.
You talked about a lot about the off-track growth that you've had over the last year. Has that directly resulted to some of the on-track growth, do you think?
Yeah, a little bit. It's been enjoyable, though, for sure. You know, I never understood the slow down to go fast mentality, but that's just the truth of it. You know, I just had to sit down and realize I don't, you know, I when I was driving trucks last year or two, you know, I thought I was, you know, if I won this race or I won this many races, I'd get a call to run a cup car, and you know, that's just not the reality of it. But if you just do all the right things and you're buttoned up, and a lot of owners actually, you know, can appreciate a guy who can run top five every single weekend and win consistently, rather than, you know, one hero move that's pretty badass and then three more that take you three steps backwards.
What's been the most difficult part about cup racing so far?
It's just really tough, you know. It's you're one really good restart away from running up front and having a good rest of the day, and one really bad restart, one bad pit stop that to, you know, having to really claw and fight. You know, everybody's super close, so you know, today's even gonna be like that. You know, this track's already super tight fields, right? And Group A to Group B, you know, just that little advantage is gonna be more noticeable here. So. Yeah, it's super tight. You know, just every little detail matters. You know, if you're a little off on pit road, you might be third or fifth on your rolling time, where here you're about 25th.
As you move on from Legacy after next weekend, what can you take away from this experience as a whole over these last months?
Just all the cup experience, honestly. I'm going to have a lot more cup races than I ever thought I would have, and but then get to go race for a playoff spot and try to run up front. And you know, I ran in the top five in a cup car already. So I kind of know what it's like to run up front in a cup car, which is crazy to think about. You know, I was sitting here this year wondering what it would be like to run a cup car, and little did I know I ran most of a race in the top three rows on restarts and didn't make mistakes and ran side by side with Denny Hamlin, who is fighting for a championship. You know, that's the guy I was racing with a lot of the race.
Last couple things here, just for next weekend in the truck championship. You know, obviously you didn't need to win Homestead, you did. How much do you think that momentum will carry into next weekend?
I think it'll be huge. You know, the fact we won the last race before Phoenix, I think it's going to help. Just really gelling, really feel good. You know, obviously this is going to be the last race that we can fight for last season we can fight for a championship together, at least for the next few years. And we want to click that off. You know, they ran second in 2019. We want to get a championship, give it to Al Nice, and have one on the shelf, and then be able to collect the cool trophies we didn't get along the way for the next years to come. But we know this is our shot and our one and only shot for a while that I can race for a truck championship.
How well do you feel like Phoenix will shape up for you guys in terms of the track and how you guys have done there in the past?
I think we'll be fine. We've ran good, we've ran bad, but every racetrack I feel like we've ran really good at this year, so I have no doubt we'll be nothing but different.
in the past it hasn't always taken a win to win the championship, but did you kind of have to go in that into the race with that mindset?
I think it will. I mean, it took being in the top four to make the final four last week. I mean, literally the final four were literally 1 through 4. So I expect Phoenix to be no different.
And what would it mean for you just to end your Truck Series career with a championship as you move on to Cup here next year?
I don't know. I'll probably still be celebrating by the time February comes along. They might have to cancel the Xfinity Cup race because I'll still be doing burnouts out there.
Awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Anthony Alfredo and Carson Hocevar, our guests this week in the hot seat. And our thanks, of course, goes to Anthony Alfredo, Carson Hocevar, as well as Cora Banks and JP Payne for getting those good stuff for us and for Nathan with Carson Hocevar. So we hope you enjoyed those fresh interviews, and we have plenty more during the off season. We're not going to just take it easy and do nothing. We're going to be busy. And of course, once we get to those colder months, we may just be a bike weekly show, but we'll definitely be on during the winter time. So we're not going anywhere, folks. We're going to hang out with you fans during the off season. Well, with that, championship time is just about here. So I want to give, first of all, major kudos to Nathan Solomon and Phil Cavalli. That's right, Phil Cavalli's on our team. Both of them did a fantastic job at Martinsville Speedway last weekend, and I'm so thrilled to have such talented people who get the job done behind the scenes. I don't get to see all their names. There's so many of us now in our emerging but very successful media outlet. And I also want to wish good luck to Luis Torres and Christopher Vargas as our representatives this weekend, both on photography for Luis and Christopher. And for Luis, he's our roaming reporter. So shout out to both of them to do a great job, and can't wait to see the great works that they have for us to close out this NASCAR season. In any event, folks, it's time. I know. It's about time to go and wrap up the show. So for Anthony Alfredo, Carson Hocevar, I'm your host Rob Tiongson, saying thanks so much for joining me on episode number 94 of TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. Check out our prior podcasts on any major podcasting platforms such as Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Episode number 95 is next week. Nathan will be back with me. We'll ruminate over what happened at Phoenix Raceway and potentially talk about any silly season news that comes our way. For the final time in the NASCAR season, let's all go get the checkered flag. Until next time, so long, everyone.